Hello and welcome back to Luther Witness Podcast. Today we have something very special for you and something that I hope we'll be able to do more of in the future. But before I begin, let me start with a shout out to our podcast partners, KFUO.org. Christ for you anytime, anywhere. Check them out, KFUO.org. Also, if you're not a subscriber, please let me take a moment to encourage you to subscribe to Luther Witness. I don't do this often, but if you like what we're doing here, we have plenty more in the print magazine, plenty more content that you're going to enjoy. So learn more at our website, witness.lcms.org. Now, on to the show. Many of you may not know this, in part because we're in the middle of a presidential cycle in the U.S. and we miss a lot of international news. But in southern Brazil, particularly in the Porto Alegre area, there has been one of the most devastating floods on record for this region. And the numbers are positively staggering. Floodwaters began to rise as early as April 28th and in some places remained elevated for 3 to 4 weeks. Now, during this flood, initially 580,000 people were displaced, and 380,000 people, 2.5 months later, like this is as of July 14th, remain displaced. Over 181 people died, and over 60 remain unaccounted for. So the damage and the devastation of this flooding is absolutely astounding and heartbreaking. Well, I've had the great privilege of traveling to Porto Alegre with our photographer, the LCMS's disaster response director, and our South America facilitator, to see how the Evangelical Lutheran Church of Brazil, that's the IELB, you'll hear us talking about the IELB throughout the show, how they've really stepped in to help and support Lutheran members and others in the community here in Porto Alegre and the surrounding region. And then also to see how the LCMS might walk alongside them and be a brother in Christ to them to help them care for their neighbors. Neat. And so I'm sitting here around a table here in Porto Alegre with a group of great guys that are going to help us tell this story. So let me introduce these and start with the most important guy in the room, the Reverend Ayrton Schrader. How are you doing, sir?
I'm fine.
It's excellent. Good
to speak the second time in the KFUO radio. And I will give welcome for you and all the American brothers in our city. And it was amazing the visit yesterday and Saturday, and together go and see and speak about. It's very nice for us, and you are helpful to Brazilian church and Brazilian people now.
Pastor Schrader, real quick, what is your position here with the Evangelical Lutheran Church of Brazil?
I'm vice president. ELB have 6 vice president in different area, and the mercy area is my area, and the response disaster response is inside in the mercy area.
Excellent. We're also here with the Reverend Ross Johnson. Ross, can you introduce yourself briefly and your role here today?
Yeah, my name is Ross Johnson. I'm the director of LCMS Disaster Response. And the work that we do is not just in the United States, but it's really working with our partner churches across the world. So when a disaster like this happens, something that's of historic proportions with a partner church in a community that has Lutheran churches, like in this situation, this is where we will collaborate and coordinate together to bring the church's resources from not just the United States, but internationally together to be able to work collaboratively.
Pastor Sharp, you're also from this region, working in this region. What is your role here at the in this area of the world?
I'm a church planner. I'm based in Montevideo, Uruguay, and I'm also the area facilitator for most of South America. So I have some stuff to do sometimes. That's great radio. Sorry. Might want to edit that one out. I was an exchange student in Brazil while I was in seminary. So I've been here before and speak a little Portuguese. And so when we have things going on in Brazil and Argentina, a lot of times I'll accompany our folks.
Don't sell yourself short. It's been delightful to have you here. And
I'm sure it's been delightful. No doubt about that.
And then we have with us the cine photographer, Eric Lunsford. How are you doing, Eric?
Good morning. I'm doing well. Thanks
for having me here. And what you're here for, obviously, photography. Briefly describe how things are going so far.
Yes, so I've been able to be a part of this team to see this, what happened, this horrific tragedy of flooding. And so to be able to be on the ground and to make photographs to tell the story, see how God is working through his people, and see how the church responds and walks together. It's such a joy to see brothers in Christ together in this time.
Thank you, Eric. So let's dive into, kind of start looking into the questions and how the IELB has responded to this rather horrific situation. Before we really get into those details, though, it's been important to hear, or it's important to know how the IELB has been preparing for this. Pastor Schrader, you've been doing some work in preparing the church here in Brazil to respond to disaster work, some conferences, you know, these type of things. Can you describe what you guys have been doing to prepare for disaster work over the last couple of years?
Yes, I worked before I elected in ILB, 14. Mm-hmm. I work in a social mercy area, and I help in a lot of little disasters in the north of Brazil. And when I was elected in 2014, my first invitation was from Dr. Ross Johnson to the disaster conference in September in Fort Wayne, and was a very amazing opportunity to learn about the Lutheran mercy in the world in disasters. And immediately we work in this vision and in this way, but not so fast and not so to have a good training, yeah? Because disaster was not so much in Brazil. But the last year, in September, Dr. Ross come here, and we speak immediately about training. And the LCMS help was to help the congregation and people, and to do two conferences. One conference open for all the Lutheran people, and we have in April 220. And there was, is recorded the conference, and a lot of people see this after and participate online in the same time too. And that was for us a very, very important opportunity, because a lot of people see this conference to have a better will to work, because the disaster was immediately after. The conference was 2021 April, and the disaster started 1 and 2 May.
Mm-hmm. Pastor Johnson, you mentioned that the IELB has been able to translate some materials that the LCMS has put together. Do you know some of these? What are some of these resources they were able to translate and use in during this disaster?
Yeah, so we're translating a few of our key resources from English into Portuguese. A couple of them have been our pastor's guide for times of tragedy, and we've translated it and distributed it to almost all of the pastors in the IELB, or they will be receiving it in the coming months. And what that is, it's a guide for pastors of what to do, what not to do in a time of disaster, but also kind of what is our Lutheran understanding of mercy work, the theology of the cross, and then how do we have a congregational-based ministry of mercy that flows from the altar into the community with the good news of the gospel along with our helping hands. One of the things that Pastor Ayrton mentioned earlier was he's really started his training in disaster response and mercy work well over a decade ago. And I think a lot of us can relate to those situations in life where you've been learning and growing in a certain area, and you might be kind of asking yourself or wondering, why am I learning? I'm doing all of this. And then a situation in life arises, and then everything that God had been teaching you and putting together in your life all comes together. In this last year, we really see how all the previous training and experiences and thinking through what is mercy work and how do we collaboratively work together as a church body, Ayrton's been able to put all of that together in an amazing way so that they've really had two recent seamless responses that have been very significant to what has become not just regional tragedies here in Brazil, but really nationwide known tragedies. And then they've also been able to gain the reputation within their greater community, and maybe even across Brazil, as a disaster response organization that is trained, that is reputable, that has experience. And they've really been able to be a blessing to their community, but also be able to get greater community support. And what I mean by that, and Ayrton will explain that, he's been able to have people that are not associated with Christianity or even the church at all that come to the church and say, you guys are experts with this and you're doing an amazing job, and we want to support you in the work that you're doing.
Yes.
Yeah, we've seen that a number of times, and we'll get into it. It's been pretty astounding to see how, you know, tons of material donated by completely unrelated organizations because they know the IELB is a reliable organization. Let's talk now, shift now a little bit to talk a little bit more about this disaster, in particular, how this flood has affected Port Alegre and the IELB. What we're interested particularly in knowing more about, Pastor Schrader, is how did this affect the congregations and the people of the IELB? You know, how many church buildings were destroyed and that lost all that they had? How many houses were really destroyed? What was the effect of this flooding that lasted as many as 3 to 4 weeks in some instances? How did this affect the IELB's people?
We have numbers. 14 churches mm-hmm. was flooding. Two for them, not much, only water, and a few hours after the water go out, and was not a big problem. 9 pastoral houses, mm-hmm. 1 total destruction. You mm-hmm. see yesterday this. Mm-hmm. And we don't have a clear number about members. But what we see in an overview, we have around 2,000 to 2,200 families directly affected with water in-house. Mm-hmm. And over 100 houses from members, this total destruction.
When you talk about total destruction, what does that mean? A lot of people haven't necessarily suffered, you know, flooding, and they don't know kind of the extent of damage that flooding can cause. What does this mean for a church or a house to be totally destroyed?
When the government say this is necessary reconstruction because they broke the ground. There's not security, you only rebuilding. It's necessary make a new ground mm-hmm. in with stones and all. This is considered destruction.
Okay.
The government defines it.
Government definition of destruction. Yes. Total yes. destruction. Gotcha. What sort of destruction have you seen? Can you describe how some of these church buildings were affected by this?
The houses, the principal was old houses. This is an area with old cities. Mm-hmm. In this place where we go today is a very, very old immigration, German immigration area. And but a lot of new and good houses with two-step go with the water too. Was too strong water.
Two floors.
And churches, the destruction is special when the water have force and go in a door and broke the other side, the wall. This was. We have only total destruction church. We don't have. We have one church with flood in from September at now 4 times, and we look for a new place, replace this church. And the church what we see yesterday was a lot of water is in the San Juan, the green church.
Yeah,
was all under the water, but the wall is not destroyed. Mm-hmm. But it's more things to do.
Yeah. So not only was there the water in the St. John Church, right?
Yeah, St. John.
It was up to the rafters,
yes.
And it sat there full of water for weeks on end, right?
Yes, and now you can see when you open the wall, inside is very, very humidity.
Mm-hmm.
To paint this, we must wait 2 or 3 months with good sun.
Mm-hmm. For it to dry out so that
yes,
you can repaint
yes.
it. That's right. That's right.
One thing that's a little bit deceptive I found when it comes to floods is, what is kind of the definition of total destruction of a house? Because you can say, as Ertan's mentioning, total destruction of a house is where the walls have collapsed, where the foundation has been undermined, and you pretty much have to do a complete teardown and rebuild. But imagine if in your house, floodwaters came in for a month and destroyed every single piece of personal property that you own, whether it's your mattress, your tables, all your furnishings, anything else that you might have, your kids' clothes, their stuffed animals, all the way to your photos, everything that you could possibly have has been destroyed in a flood, and you come back to nothing but the shell of a house. The building construction is a little bit different here insofar as they have a lot of concrete block houses or concrete houses. So in a sense, the water can come in and then leave, and you can power wash, you can repaint a house, make some redo the cabinetries, and the walls stay. But pretty much every earthly good that you have is gone. And for many people, that's the utter destruction that they've had, that all their memories, everything that they've owned, and they're pretty much starting new. In other disasters, you don't have that kind of complete, utter devastation. So even the number of complete losses might be a little bit lower, but the amount of trauma that this has caused a lot of people from losing literally every single earthly good that they own is very high. We're talking tens of thousands, if not over 100,000 homes have been destroyed in that sense, that every earthly good is lost. It'd be like if you walked away from your house with nothing but the clothes that you're wearing today and you came back to no earthly possessions, that's what you're experiencing, because almost nothing can be salvaged after these floods.
Yeah, I think in this total destruction is a lot of places. The water take out all the people. Look, I think my house was here or here. I cannot see. It's not a signal. What place was exactly the house? So much was the destruction. And the other is other point is the house is not so bad, but the government say we don't allow a new construction here. All the families from this area we replace in other place. And in this way we consider this as a total destruction, because don't have a house.
And Roy, that's one of the things that we often see when it comes to flood recovery and people trying to rebuild their lives. The water will subside after whatever period of time, and then they want to go back, clean out their house, and then get back to normal. But the government will say, hey, pause. We're going to assess if you're going to be in what we're going to now classify as a green zone, where it's no longer considered habitable. And that time period that the government can take could be weeks up to a couple of years. And so you're not allowed to rebuild your house or go back into your house, because the government's saying this could possibly be a green zone, or they make it a green zone, and then you're in limbo. And where do you live? Because for most of us, we don't have a plan B. Your house is your house, and it's kind of your only option. And so when you're thinking about for weeks and months on hand, living from family member to family member, you're almost kind of homeless in that sense. And for many of these people, they might have a loan on their house, so they're still required to make the monthly payments or to pay off the house that they can't even live in, that they're also going to have to be able to put thousands and thousands of dollars that they don't have on top of paying off the loan for this house. So you really have this sense of economic frustration, but also this long-term homelessness, which is very, very emotionally draining. Just moving one time for a lot of our families can be very emotional, let alone doing a move under a crisis and then losing every earthly good that you have. So these people have been through a whole lot. We've seen that with the National Church pastors. There's been multiple National Church pastors that had to escape from their house, and they came back to literally nothing. And they've, for months now, been going from house to family member to church member, just trying to literally have a room or a shelter over their head. And then when you have this massive, massive flooding, there's not empty houses that you can just easily rent, because everybody's looking for a place to live. And so the housing crisis that we're seeing is real, and it adds to an underlying tension all across the entire region. And it's not just been a small city, but this has gone through multiple states of Brazil, which is another aspect of this. In the United States, we're used to maybe a neighborhood or two or a part of a city that's been affected by a disaster. Maybe it's along a creek or a river, but this has been literally thousands of square miles in what we would consider multiple states as far as the ground that has been flooded by this, which makes it so much harder for the national government to respond. This is something that's bigger than the national government can handle. The people really need to be caring for themselves. And we have seen that where the church and other organizations and businesses have gotten together in a very historic, unique way because they see the human suffering that's happening.
Let me, Pastor Schrader, you mentioned, we traveled up yesterday into the mountains. We're going back up there later on today. There's a story of a church that basically you're going to have to move to another location. Can you tell that story of what happened up there, the damage that they've endured, and what's kind of in the future so far for that congregation up there? Give us the name of the congregation and that sort of stuff too, please.
This is the congregation of the city Estrela. This is a congregation very close from the river, and they start this location because Mercy work with the people around them. And all times, this church was the center to help the people, to care the people in a little flooding. But this last year and now, the water come, and the last time the church was underwater. And they lost four times all. And I look and speak with the leadership and the pastor, it's time to we see a new place, because it's not possible to help the people and all times rebuild your church. And in this way, we see a place not so far, because a lot of the people around what have the necessity for mercy work, they don't have a car to go to the school, church, and or to go to ask help. The community, they like stay together with this place, but not together with the river.
Pastor Schrader, I've been really encouraged to see how the IELB has responded to help its own people and to help the people of the community here in Porto Alegre and the surrounding areas. They didn't sit back and wait for others to do the work. You know, the IELB, the congregations of the IELB jumped right in to help those in need. Can you share some of the ways that the IELB has done this, how they've helped the congregations and people who are suffering from this flooding?
Yeah, the first time in the first days, we meet with the congregation pastors and say, give us a little overview. What is in your situation? How many members and what will you do? And after they write how much money is necessary, we start with the small money. So we sent you this money and you can work. And after report us this and we talk, we sit down in the same side of the table. This was my mind with the congregation. And in this way, a lot of not-Lutheran and Lutheran members give very, very big donations. When ILB has $2,500,000 real, this is one from three parts of the annually budget. And the donation was in 1.5 months. So I say 1.5 months because now is we have donations, but it's small. The biggest donation was in the first 40 days.
So within the first 40 days, the congregation of the IELC raised another third of the church's budget, is what you're saying, overall national church's budget to support the congregation.
Yes, I have a lot of documents what the congregation sent me. And this congregation that we see visit yesterday night, this gave me an overview about 800,000. And we start with 100,000 to work, and you see, they work a lot. And they ask after with the government, because the school, the government helped them. give the material, and the church give the volunteering work and pay work. And in this way, in all places, we say, we don't have all the money, but we have to start helping you. Mm-hmm. And it's very, very easy. God help us so much in this area, because we have not a bad relation with the pastors and congregation. We all understand that it's not money to rebuild all mm-hmm. in a short time. It's not possible. It's not possibility to the government. I think we have 10, 20 years, we will see a lot of destruction, abandoned, not rebuilding, because it's too much.
Eric, the first place we visited, St. John the Baptist, we saw some amazing things. It's pretty delightful to watch how these churches have supported one another. Can you describe for our listeners how that congregation that wasn't flooded itself stepped up to support the community around them?
Absolutely. When you walk in the door, you hear this joyful talking together, this fellowship, this beautiful Christian fellowship, the ladies in the congregation working together to provide thousands of meals and cooking together. And so you just have to kind of think about what you hear. You hear the clanging pots, you hear pans being scrubbed, but you hear this wonderful discussion back and forth. You hear this wonderful joy and humor. And to see that, this wonderful bracing resilience, it's incredible to see, because it shows this, they're bearing the love of Christ to others. And as a photographer, that's really, I want to show that, because it's difficult with a flood. How do you show a flood of what has been? And so here you can pick up with these wonderful little stories. You can see and explore how people come together, provide in love their neighbor. And that is just such a wonderful thing to see.
Yeah, it was an amazing thing to see the what they've done to support those, both once again in the congregation community and in the even their help with the civil defense. They did a lot there with the police and the SWAT team, providing them resources so that they could actually recover there in that area. Ross, I wanted to ask you, this is the first disaster I've seen, the first disaster response, and it's been impressive to me to see how the IELB has taken up this almost entirely on its own right here at the outset. You've seen a lot more disasters, you've helped a lot more of these circumstances. How does the response of the IELB compare with other disaster responses that you've seen?
What's been amazing, and I think Eraton was explaining this a little bit, is the amount of response that the National Church has done. And I think that it's a testimony to mature members in a mature church body that has been teaching and catechizing their members with the gospel for not just decades, but for multiple generations. The National Church here is about 100 years old. And you really see a mature Christianity, in the sense that when there's a tragedy and they see people in need, not just Lutherans, but when they see other people in their community in need, they get together in the name of Christ to take care of their community's needs. The historic offerings that they've been receiving is amazing to see the percentages of money that they give, well over $500,000 in financial assistance. And that's not talking about all the money that they've given in donations of food. Massive, massive, massive amounts of food have been donated from Lutherans all across the country. Clothes. Churches instantly became distribution centers of meals, hot meals, boxed lunches, clothes for the community that has lost literally everything. And when I mentioned thinking about the flood victims that have walked out of their house with nothing but the clothes on their back, they come back with nothing to wear, no change of clothes, nothing. These distribution centers that the churches stood up over the last few months have been a blessing to these communities that don't have anything but a dime in their pocket. And then they're able to get all new clothes. They've been able to get meals ongoing for months. So that's been a very unique thing that's been happening. And like I said, I think that's a fruit of the Holy Spirit and generations of wonderful biblical-based teaching. The second thing that I think is very unique about this flood is, in the United States, we've seen a lot of floods that, you know, the creeks rise or the rivers rise. because of heavy rains. And then you'll have river water that will go into a community for a few days, and then it subsides and it leaves, and then you can start the recovery process. What we've seen here is not only have we had areas flood that have never been flooded before, but they thought that they were in a place of refuge in the sense that their house or their church is never flooded. So they're gathering other people in their community from lower lying areas. And then the waters keep coming and keep coming. And then they come into their house or that church that they thought was a place of safety and refuge. And then that place, they're knee high. And then they're trying to discover another place that's even higher ground. And so there's that kind of secondary trauma of, I think I'm safe. I'm making a wise decision by staying here or going to the church. And then that place has flooded that never flooded before. And there's absolute chaos and panic. The other thing is the water has stayed in these houses and churches for a month at a time. And every single day, kind of like Noah in the ark, you're looking out and saying, is the water going to go down or not? And there's that tensity of like, when can I get into my church? When can I get back into my house? When can we start the recovery process? Because otherwise these people are just nomadic, going from house to house or family member to family member, not knowing how long they're going to be welcomed, not knowing where they're going to have a house. So the amount of time that the water just sat for 3-4 weeks at a time is something that's very unique to this disaster, that the rains just kept raining, that the rivers kept draining into these areas, and the water just wouldn't dissipate quick enough.
Yeah, thanks, Russ. I'm exploring as a photographer these water lines, and you see this everywhere you go. It's very hard to depict a flood after it has been. You see everything destroyed. You see things coated in this, a lot of muck. But when you explore these water lines, you can see these on the walls. They creep up and they create a line, and the waters creep up and it creates another line, and it continues to do so. And beyond, before you know it, the water line ends beyond the ceiling. And that is remarkable in that how much water was there, entire places underwater. And so that's what I'm thinking I'm exploring as a photographer is try to picture that and show that, because it's very difficult to show a place that has been flooded. And this is a very clear marker of what has been.
Pastor Sharp, the amount of donations given to the IEOB has also astounded me. Can you help our listeners kind of have a perspective? You know, I'm thinking here, for instance, of that, once again, that first church we visited and the amount of donations they received. Can you help give our people, our listeners, a perspective on just how much was donated to the IEOB in various areas and how they're distributing this?
There were tons and tons of materials that are donated to them. I know that our school in Uruguay sent 14 tons of clothes and perishable goods.
And that's not an exaggeration. That's literally 14 tons.
Yeah. And that happened all over southern Brazil. It happened from our brothers and sisters in Paraguay as well. The Lutheran Church of Paraguay sent materials. And so, you know, I have no idea how many tons of clothes and non-perishable goods were donated by people from the LB and connected to the LB and then sent to these congregations that became centers for distribution and mercy work.
Pastor Schrader, we talked a little bit earlier about the donations received from non-IELB, non-Lutherans. Can you give a little bit of idea of what some of these donations were and the extent, and you know, perhaps why this was, why these non-Lutheran, even many times non-Christian organizations were donating to the IELB?
I think the first is the theology of the cross gave to the Lutheran a clear now about mercy. It's not necessary to ask God, what is this? What God will with this? What is the future? No, it's a situation. And because the God's mercy for us, he will be mercy to the people with our work. And this was clear. The Lutheran, they go directly to work. I don't ask this. Before I can speak with the pastors and the congregation, all was working and open the doors and care people and receive donations. Yeah? Because the Lutheran, they look what I can do and immediately do this. Yeah? And other was, I think the Lutheran don't do this to share and say, oh, I'm so lovely. Yeah? They work. And they put in Facebook and Instagram, happy. God gave me opportunity to help people. And this, the people see around, around Brazil and other countries, and was not opportunity to go to the social media and say, I'm better as you. Was the clear work. And it was not a work to put the other down and I'm over. Was only the work. Yeah? The pictures and what they write was, we do this. Yeah? And the other side, Brazil in north and northeast, out this state, the pastors have opportunity. The media, the TV, they see so much Lutheran workers here because this state we have the half of the Brazilian Lutheran from ILB, many Lutheran churches here, and they see this and ask the pastor, come, we will do an interview with you. What is in Rio Grande do Sul? What your church do? And they have the opportunity to share the link of the disaster conference for April. So EILB has a training. And the training, you can look for this. Mm-hmm. And the communication system, they look this and say, it's really, it's true. The church have, you can access this here. And in this way, state government, city government, they ask from Lutheran congregation in the city, give us an address where we can send the money or we can send the donations. Yeah? And other was the name of the bank system, PIX. Give @ilb.org.br is the church name. Mm-hmm. Was not a name what don't give clear direction. And I think all this together, and special, the Lutheran doctrine. I speak with pastors, with other churches, and we have donations from other churches, from other states. The state that I worked 20 years, a lot of churches sent money to our church because, see, this is the ILB area. The Lutheran are working in this, and it's better we help the Lutheran workers that we will start a small work with our church. The Pentecostal church, true Pentecostal church, sent us money. Not so big money, but for me, it's the reference. They see that ILB have a good work in disaster response.
One thing that Ayrton's not saying, because he's very humble, but the preparation for this historic storms and these historic floods that have happened this last year has been really a vision that Ayrton has had. Over a decade ago, he began his training in disaster response. He realized that a key part of mercy work is helping people in natural disasters. And so he began his training. And nobody in Brazil really has a lot of knowledge with disaster response. In the United States, there's dozens of reputable organizations that help people after a time of crisis. But in Brazil, you don't have that network of disaster responders. And so when he started his training, everybody's probably looking at him like, why are you spending so much time and energy in this preparation and training? And he's been talking about and laying a foundation in making aware the need across the Lutheran Church in Brazil for over a decade. Last year, when we had the first kind of historic flood, the church woke up in the sense that they realized that there really is a need for training in disaster response. In April, literally the week before this massive historic flood hit, we had a major training event at the seminary, but it wasn't just for seminarians. It was for a couple of hundred pastors, lay people, seminarians to be trained in a weekend-long conference about what to do, what not to do in a time of a tragedy, and then why do we do it as Lutherans? And through that training event, we see that the church gained not only knowledge of what do you do, but also they began to get a reputation of this is an organization that has experience doing disaster response. And that's why there's so much outpouring of support to the Lutherans. Not only was it in a community that had many, many Lutheran churches, but also it had many trained disaster responders. So we gained a reputation of being subject matter experts, so to speak, and we were able to fill a vacuum of leadership that wasn't able to be given by any other organization or even the government. So the Lutheran Church became a central center of distribution for the entire country, for the government, for nonprofit organizations, for other church bodies, as Ayrton was mentioning. But secondly, it really became a place of distribution in places that people were going to, looking to Lutheran churches, because they knew that Lutherans were competent and that they cared about their community.
Ross, you're here to help develop an action plan with the IELB in terms of how the LCMS can walk alongside them and support the work they're doing. Obviously, the whole thing hasn't been worked out yet. You're here to discuss that with them and help them figure this out. But can you give us kind of a broad outline in terms of framework, what this might look like in terms of how the LCMS is potentially walking alongside them in this work?
Right. So in a situation like this, there's three general areas that we want to help out. We want to make sure that pastors and congregations are up and organized and running and operational, because the pastor and the congregation become a center or a hub of mercy work into their community. So we want to make sure that those churches are functioning in their community so that they can express the mercy of Christ. The second thing that we want to do is care for the people that God has put in our lives and we have a vocational responsibility for. And those also are the members, the people that are of the church, so that we can get them back on their feet so that they can continue to be that light of Christ or that salt in the middle of this world that needs to experience the love of Christ. And then we don't only take care of our churches and our members, but then that mercy continues to flow into the community at large. And we've seen that very visibly through these massive distributions of food and clothes and all the kind of needed supplies. I would say the vast majority of the people that have been helped by our kitchens that have been giving hot meals, the people that have been coming by for clothes, probably the vast majority, well over 90% of those people are not Lutheran, are not associated with the church. They're just people in the community that knows that the Lutheran Church cares about them and is a place of help for those people. So once again, we're doing this assessment, thinking about how do we get our congregations and our pastors and our church workers back in a functioning position? I don't know about you, but if I didn't have a home for a few months, I would not be very effective as a church worker or as a pastor. I think my stress level would be extremely high and I would be in survival mode. What we're trying to get, we're trying to move the congregations that have been flooded out and the church workers that have been flooded out away from survival mode into something that's much more sustainable in a steady state where they have a home, they have a church, and that way they can kind of long-term be that voice of Christ in their community. So as we're working this week, we're looking at how do we help out these churches and church workers, and it's a collaboration and a partnership where the national church has identified these are our priorities in these areas that we want to work, and then the LCMS is coming alongside of them in their initial assessment with additional funding to be able to stretch or strengthen the work that the national church is doing.
Last question, Pastor Schrader, for you. As you've watched the IELB during this disaster, can you share some ways that you've seen how the IELB and her people have learned and grown as a consequence of this rather devastating and horrific catastrophe?
One point is a lot of people more times think IELB is not a mission church. It is a church that don't work in mission. And we see now how much the church was working and is working. Eh? In this way, this area, the churches have a lot of kitchen and places to make food. And it was amazing to see because the people see opportunity to do what they can do. Other point is, I think around September, October, we have a new challenge. Now, many, many families live together in a house that was 3 or 4 people. You have 10, 12, because they care all his family, the big family, inside, because it's not a place to rent, don't have a house. But this is very, very stressing. And September, October is not certainly that they have a new job, a new income, and it's necessary they go out and see a own place to live. And this is my mind, this stressing time come. And in that time, we don't have donation. The big donation is stop. Now we have donations from the church and what the church look together with government and cities outside. Yeah? And in that time, a lot of people lost the work because now the companies, they don't pay, but they don't put you out of the job position because the document all is not right now. Yeah? And September, October is the time to see this. The government give a lot now, $1,000 per family, but not to all because it's very bureaucratic. And I don't believe that the government give a new money. And the donation don't come, and I see a very, very bad and challenged time in 2 months. Mm. IELB look for this. We speak to the congregation, don't rebuild all. Have money to help the people in the future because the life is more important as the construction. Mm-hmm.
Roy, what Ayrton's talking about is something that we experience after any huge catastrophic event. When the event is happening, it's on the news, it's in front of everybody's eyes, and everybody's very generous. And then after a couple of weeks, the story kind of goes away, and whatever the thing in politics is, it takes over in the news. And they forget that disaster response recovery isn't something that happens in 2 weeks. It happens over the course of months or years. And that's something that's forgotten about by everybody. Everybody just assumes, oh, aren't these people okay now? Aren't they back in their houses? Don't they have clothes? And the answer is no. The Lutheran Church focuses on having a long-term disaster response and recovery plan because the Lutheran Church here in Brazil has been here over 100 years. They went through the disaster. They were in the communities. Their congregations were in the communities where all this is happening, and we pray that the Lutheran Church will be here for hundreds more years. So we are perfectly situated to have a long-term response, and that's what we're planning on doing. Even though this is out of the news and organizations aren't giving any more on a regular basis, we as Lutherans, we don't stop. And so we had an initial infusion of donation and food and financial assistance, and we're planning on doing a secondary or tertiary infusion of assistance because we know that the needs continue, even though it's not in front of people's eyeballs in the news.
Thank you, once again, all of you. We're coming up on the end of our time here, so thank you all of you for taking this time to help us learn more about this disaster and how the church appropriately responds to such disaster. Thank you, especially to you, Pastor Schrader, for taking the time to do this.
I will say thank you for you and for all the Lutherans from LCMS, for the partners over 120 years. We worked together in a lot of time, and this last year we worked together in disaster response. It's amazing. Work together, you. And the last point what I will say, you see in the two divine service we go yesterday, how many visitors. This is new in the church. A lot of people that don't know about Lutheran Church see the church in this disaster. I think God opened doors to mission and to evangelism and to be care people. He has a salvation plan inside in this disaster. A lot of Lutheran that don't come to the church a lot years come back in this time, and we ask the pastors and congregation to receive, return lovely, and work together, because God has the has the plan of salvation all times, in all ways, in all situations. Thank you so much for this opportunity.
I always tell our listeners when I conclude our podcast that the Lutheran Witness is here to help them learn to interpret the world from a Lutheran perspective. And here I want to say to you, Pastor Schrader, thank you for helping us learn how to interpret the world from a Lutheran perspective as you bring the theology of the cross and Christ crucified to these people in suffering and disaster. Once again, thank you everybody for listening to Lutheran Witness Podcast, and until next time, God's blessings.